All right. It's time to get started in here. We were able to get through all of our text last Wednesday, so we are going to try and see if we can get through a little bit more today and finish up this section that goes through the end of chapter 26. We'll be starting in chapter 22 here. So here's our outline that we've been working through. We're going to try and knock out this last section here, getting through some commandments, some different various and sundry laws as we go through this section. We get back into sort of a law, Levitical kind of terminology in some ways as far as the Leviticus style of writing in some aspects here. And then we have, if we get to it here, this this call to remember and to obey what's been commanded. So in chapter 22, as you look at this chapter, we kind of have a list of seemingly sundry laws here in relationship to our neighbor's animals. If we see something going on with our neighbor's animals, the Cliff Notes version is we need to do right by our neighbor. Whenever we look at the law, and when Christ was asked about, the greatest commandment, which is what? What is the greatest commandment when Jesus was asked? Yes, and that's how the lawyer said, what does the law say, and how do you read it? It said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself. And so this is where some of these things, these aspects come in, is taking loving your neighbor. And this literally is your countryman, your kinsman. You shall not see your countryman's ox or his sheep straying away and pay no attention to them. Now that's asking a lot sometimes because we're busy, right? I don't have time to wrangle an ox. I got things to do today. I don't have time to mess with my neighbor's ox. And well, according to this, if you see it, it's your responsibility. Pay attention. And so it talks about take it back to your neighbor or countryman if you know it's his, if it's his brand or whatever that's on it, if you know it's his. If you don't know whose it is or they're very far off, then you can take it to your house and you need to care for it while it's at your house. And then when they come ask for it, you give it to them. You are not, it says in verse 3, you are not allowed to neglect them. If you see your countryman's donkey, verse 4, or ox fallen down on the way, and pay no attention to them, you shall surely help him to rise them up. So if they're in some sort of bad way, you need to help them as well. So there's this obligation to help your neighbor in relationship to his belongings. Verse 5, a woman shall not wear a man's clothing, nor a man put on woman's clothing. Moreover, to these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. If you want to write it here, Exodus chapter 22, verse 6, Exodus 22, verse 6, and Leviticus 11, 32. This is something that's already been stated, Leviticus 11, 32. But what are we talking about here? What is the issue? Is it that if a woman wears a flannel shirt that, things are, that's not good? What is the issue? Yes, so there are distinct roles for women and what they are doing, and distinct roles for the men, and these are not to be, the line is never to be blurred. And we kind of see this as well as some other things that we talk about in this chapter, but do not blur the lines on who is female and who is male. Do not blur the lines on these things. This is a stark kind of a thou shalt not situation, obviously. Verse 6, if you happen to come upon a bird's nest along the way, who hasn't, right? Come across a bird's nest, and what are you supposed to do with the bird's nest if the bird is on the eggs or with the little hatchlings? What are you supposed to do? If you want to eat anything of this, do you eat the mom or do you eat the babies? The babies, right? Even though the mom would be bigger, she's bigger, right? But you're not supposed to eat the mother. And it's interesting, this, it says, you shall surely let the mother go, but the young you may take for yourself, in order that it may be well with you, and you may prolong your days. Where have we heard that? Where have we heard that? And what? And do you guys remember in connection with what commandment? What's that? Yes, honor your father and your mother, right? This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you. It's interesting that this commandment, seemingly kind of like minuscule, is directly connected with that it may be well with you. Don't mess with mama hens, right? Don't mess with these things. We have this connection here. When you build a new house, what are you supposed to add to your roof? Verse 8. A parapet. That's a really awesome word for what? You can Google it. It's a railing or a wall or some sort of means to keep people from falling off a roof. Because roofs were used as places, I don't know if you've ever been in a hot area, hot, dry climate, and you want to get up somewhere where you get air movement, right? And so houses were made flat. And then, so here you're going to be on top of the house, and you needed something there that would keep you from falling off said house. So protection for those who are on the roof, which we have similar laws about swimming pools and things of that nature as well. So there's this, and he says that you will not bring blood guilt on your house if anyone falls from it. You shall not sow in your vineyard two kinds of seed. So again, we're not mixing the line on this. Things are distinct. We don't mix things. We're not doing hybrid vineyards here. Right? We're not getting all Napa Valley on this. So you are doing one thing or the other. You're not mixing things. You shall not sow your vineyard two kinds of seed. What you have sown in Crete's vineyard will become defiled. If you want to write it here, Leviticus 19:19. We see something similar to this as well. You shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. You shall not plow with an ox or a donkey together. Let's take just a second and go over to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Beginning in verse 14, do not be bound together with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness? What harmony has Christ with Belial? Or what has a believer in common with an unbeliever? Or what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God. So this idea of not being unequally yoked is a direct kind of reference to this passage here, to not be unequally yoked. So here, do not yoke an ox and a donkey together. What do you think the plow rating on an ox is compared to a donkey? You think an ox is probably rated for a higher plowing rating? Yeah. And that poor donkey will just be taken wherever that ox wants to go. Right, the donkey will probably have something to say about it, but they will be along for the ride. How can that be related to a relationship? Is that possible that can happen in a relationship? Somebody is going to be the ox and somebody will be the donkey in their relationship, right? And so somebody is going to be the stronger one that's going to be pulling the relationship around. And we need to be careful of that warning here. And this is connected with this passage, not yoking these two animals together. And then in like manner, you shall not wear material mixed of wool and linen together. They were not allowed to mix different types of threads together, which, you know, what would we be able to do? I mean, who here is wearing 100% cotton today? That's obviously not something that is binding today, but they were not allowed to mix those kind of materials. And then also making tassels for the corners of your garment, which cover yourself. Do you remember we talked about this in Numbers? Go back to Numbers chapter 15, verse 37. Numbers 15:37. Why were they supposed to have tassels? Do you remember? because they're fashionable. Tassels are awesome. They look great on the dash or, you know, above the windshield in your car. Have you seen those before? Numbers 15, starting in verse 38. Speak to the sons of Israel and tell them they shall make for themselves tassels on the corners of the garments throughout their generations. Tassels will never go out of style, all right? Tassels. And they shall put them on each corner of the cord of blue. It shall be a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of the Lord, so as to do them and not to follow after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you played the harlot. So not only were they fashionable tassels, but they were primarily something to remember. So woven into their clothing was a specific reminder for them to obey and remember, not to follow their own eyes or their own understanding, but to follow God. So it's interesting that he had them even sew it into their own clothing. History says, I mean, for a while, right? and we don't know how many people, maybe some people needed bigger tassels to remember better. And maybe, I don't know if you're a parent and you're like, I'm going to make the tassels on my son's clothes like huge so he remembers to, I don't know how they did that, obviously, but they were supposed to do that, to remember, and, you know, for a while they did, so. Yes, I mean, this is, if you're I don't know all the various levels of Jewish practice, but like Hasidic Jews, for sure, if you see them wearing that underneath their clothes, you'll see that. So that's something that's still done today. So we get into some laws concerning morality, accusations here about different things and protections in place. So we have this situation here where somebody has a wife and he turns against her, verse 13 of 22, and charges her with shameful deeds and publicly defames her and says, I took this woman, but when I came near her, I did not find her to be a virgin. So newlyweds, and he claims, or he makes this accusation at some point that she is not a virgin, and then brings this and makes a big spectacle about it. And they produce, verse 15, produce evidence of the girl's virginity. And the father will say to the elders, I gave my daughter to this man for a wife, but he turned against her, and behold, he has charged her, verse 17, with shameful deeds, saying, I did not find her, your daughter, a virgin, but this is the evidence of my daughter's virginity. And they shall spread the garment before the elders of the city. What are they talking about here? What garment are they talking about? Any guesses? Don't Google this, but any guesses? Bed sheets. It's either bed sheets or some sort of cloth that could have been used ceremonially to prove that she was indeed a virgin when they conceived and or when they consummated their union. And so this was a sign that was kept by the father to show that his daughter was indeed a virgin. And so in this case, if evidence is produced that she was indeed, and he's just being a stinker and saying these things about her, then they chastise him, which is the same idea of beating him. He gets a public chastisement, and on top of that, he has to pay 100 shekels of silver, which is a lot of money, right? So why do you think this is in place, that you're going to get publicly beaten and then pay 100 shekels of silver? Why do you think this is in place here, this stout punishment? You're going to think really hard before I go out and do this, because you're doing this. And because he publicly defamed a virgin of Israel, and she shall remain his wife and cannot divorce her all his days. Who are we punishing there at that point, right? So, but if this charge is true, the other side of it, and she is not a virgin, then they shall bring out the girl to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city the city shall stone her to death because she has committed an act of folly. So, and he says, and thus you shall purge the evil from among you. And guys, remember, we're looking at this and we're saying, well, that sounds pretty harsh, but this is the price for living holy in the type of relationship that they had to live with God. God picked them and said, I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to give you all these things. And we're going to look at that here in a moment. But this is the way you're going to have to live. This is the code that you're going to have to live by in order for me to dwell this close with you. I cannot be around sin. I cannot be around those things. And so this is why these things are in place. Verse 22, we have some other indecencies. If a man is found lying with a married woman, then both of them shall die, and the man who lay with a woman and the woman, thus you shall purge the evil from Israel. Which, this is interesting, whenever the woman is brought to Jesus who was found in fornication, right, or caught in adultery or whatever, that where was the dude? Right, where was the guy in that? And they brought her before Jesus. According to Levitical law, he should have been punished as well. They both should have been punished. But he was not brought before them. So it was obvious that they were not trying to seek righteousness in that moment. They were just trying to trick Jesus. Verse 23, there's a girl who's a virgin engaged to a man. And when we read through this text, this idea of engagement is you're basically married to this individual at that point in these engagement practices that they had. And so we're talking specifically about women who are already betrothed or otherwise married in this section. So here's a girl who's a virgin engaged to a man. Another man finds her in the city and lies with her, either enticingly or otherwise. And you'll bring them both out of the gate of the city and shall stone them to death, the girl because she did not cry out. So if the girl cried out and tried to escape, it is obvious that she was not complicit to what was going on or did not want to be involved in what was going on, and then it was just the man who was going to be stoned. And in this case, likewise, it talks about this in verse 25, but if in the field the man finds a girl who's engaged and forces her and lies with her, then only the man who lies with her shall die. But you shall do nothing to the girl. There is no sin of the girl worthy of death. For just as a man rises against the neighbor and murders him, so shall be this case. So this, in the case of rape, in the case of this type of scenario, it's treated as a murder. It is a death penalty. When he found her in the field, he engaged and cried out, but there was no one there to save her. Verse 28, if a man finds a girl who is a virgin, who is not engaged and seizes her and lies with her, they are discovered. Then the man who lay with her shall give the girl's father 50 shekels of silver, which is a large amount, and shall become his wife because he violated her and cannot divorce her all his days. And then a man shall not take his father's wife so that he will not uncover his father's skirt or nakedness. If you want to write out there Leviticus chapter 18, verses 7 and 8, next to verse 30. Leviticus 18, verses 7 and 8. And also here in verse 28, concerning the girl who was not already betrothed or otherwise engaged. You can write it here, Exodus chapter 22. Exodus 22, verses 15 and 16 tells us the father had the right of refusal. If this scoundrel did something like this to my daughter, I would not want to give her to him, right? I mean, I don't think there's a father in here who would want that to happen. So there was a right. If they were caught and, you know, it was something otherwise other than that, maybe something different, but in the case of forced or rape or something like that, the father had the right to refuse giving her. All right, so we're going to talk about those who are excluded from the assembly, and this does not mean they just can't come to church on Sunday. All right, if you're excluded from the assembly, you're out. You're outside the Commonwealth of Israel. You're outside all things. So the first that we see here is one who is emasculated or the male organs cut off shall not enter into the assembly of the Lord. And so it goes on to talk about this as well. Also, no Ammonite, verse 3, or Moabite shall enter the assembly of the Lord, none of their descendants, even to the 10th generation. When you read in a text where it says even to the 10th generation, it does not mean that you're counting your generations to find, it is, that is the idea that it doesn't, That's just kind of the idea of never, right? Even to the 10th generation means never. But we'll see a difference here in a moment. But the Moabite and the Ammonite, they cannot, they shall not enter, and none of their descendants enter into the assembly of the Lord, because they did not meet you with food, verse 4, and water on the way when they came out of Egypt, because they hired against you Balaam, the son of Beor, from Pethor of Mesopotamia, to curse you. Genesis chapter 12, verse 3 is an interesting thing to put out here beside. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, God said, I will bless those that bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. Here again, God is maintaining his promise to the people. So they are cursed. They are not allowed to be a part or have anything to do with the assembly of the Lord. Nevertheless, your God was not willing to listen to Balaam, so we talk about that instance there. And you shall never seek their peace or their prosperity. You shall not detest the Edomite or the Egyptian. The Edomite is your brother, and the Egyptian because you were alien in his land. And this says the sons of the third generation. So the idea is if an Edomite comes and starts living in that area and is working in that area, the great-grandchild of that Edomite, or of that, did I say Edomite? Of the Edomite can, in that case, be named among them. Yes, sir? In verse 7, Deuteronomy 23, verse 7, about the Egyptian? Yeah. So we have the case of the eunuch that went up, and he would not have been, in his case, he was proselyte at best, right? I mean, he may have gone up there, but he had no right. He couldn't marry into any kind of, or have any relationship, own any land or anything of that nature with Israel. He could come up to the temple and visit up to a certain distance, right, in the temple and stand outside the temple. But there's actually lines as you approach the temple. This is as far as you can go. Like if you're at this level, you can't go any further. And the Gentiles weren't allowed to go very close to the temple. As far as teaching him, obviously it wasn't a problem to teach him after the resurrection of Christ and teaching the eunuch. So this isn't something that is binding today. Was that your question? Yeah, it doesn't, the law doesn't, but why would he have been going to the temple being a eunuch is a good question, if this is the state. But he would not have had any kind of portion with Israel. He was, you know, just a foreigner coming to visit the temple, and maybe, you know, had other things to do there. But very good question, very good question. All right, the third generation, so that they're able to do that as well. So verse 9, when you go out as an army, and this we get into these next kind of verses here in verse 9 of chapter 23, and it starts talking about camp duties and things like that. This is talking specifically when you go out as an army and you're camping as an army, and you go out against your enemies, and you shall keep yourself from every evil thing. So even in battle, they're supposed to remain as holy and pure as possible. Now, obviously, they're going to be coming in contact with dead bodies and that kind of stuff in some of these campaigns, and so they'll need to continue to maintain those purity laws. But he says, if there's any of you unclean because of... it gets awkward in these verses. Nocturnal emissions. And then, obviously, whenever you use the bathroom, you need to go outside, and everybody needs to take a trowel with them when they go in their kit. That is a part of your kit, is the trowel, and to go outside the camp. And this is something, some laws that we've already seen. We've seen these laws in relationship to the whole camp and relationship to the people moving from place to place. But this is a law that's different in that he's making sure that it applies, that when we're going out on campaigns and we're camping and we're going out to war, you still maintain these principles. You still maintain these laws. He says, since the Lord your God walks in the midst of your camp to deliver you and to defeat your enemies before you, therefore your camp must be holy. All right? I don't want any uncleanness, right? Even in war, you're supposed to be holy. You're not allowed just to do whatever you want. He must not see anything indecent among you, or he'll turn away from you. So very important, especially obviously in connection with God providing that protection in war. We have also, did I skip here? Purity of the camp. Okay. All right, so now we get into some other community-type laws in the next couple of chapters, finishing out chapter 23. And you shall not charge interest to your company. Well, let me go back up. 15. You shall not hand over any escaped slave. If a slave escapes to you, he shall live with you in your midst in the place which he shall choose in one of your towns. This is specifically about an escaped from a heathen master outside of Jerusalem. So this is what he's talking about, outside of their nation. And so he shall live in one of your towns, kind of gives the idea that he wasn't previously living in one of their towns. Somebody outside who escapes to them, and you shall not mistreat him. Nobody shall be cult prostitutes, male or female prostitutes in any way. And you shall not bring the hire of a harlot or the wages of a dog into the house of the Lord your God, or any votive offering. So any of these kind of wages that are earned nefariously are not to be brought into the temple for any kind of offering. This is dirty money, so to speak. When you look here at this passage, the wages of a dog, this is not saying the wages that you earn from selling a dog. Do you guys have marginal readings there? This is male prostitution. We're talking about male and female prostitution here. If you want to write out here Revelation chapter 22, verse 15, possibly referencing the same kind of thing as well. God gets very explicit as far as things that are like a no-go. This is something that these things are not to be done, not to be practiced, and then those things are not to be, those monies are not brought into the temple. Verse 19, you shall not charge interest, which is awesome, to those who are anything loaned to your countrymen. And so it doesn't matter the rate of inflation or anything. There's no interest for those who are countrymen. I wonder, though, if they couldn't charge interest to their countrymen, if they doubled down on interest that they lent to anybody who was not their countryman. Anybody think that? Or like, I don't know, maybe, possibly. I mean, it's got to recoup it somewhere. Yeah, raise a price. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, why would you loan money? Unless it's a friend. And then you might not want to do that either. But all right. So verse 21, when you make a vow, is God serious about vows? Yes, he is. When you make a vow, it's serious. You need to make a vow towards God. It's something you better do. None of this, well, God, if you'll do this for me, and we try to make deals. Have you heard people making deals with God? That doesn't work that way. When you make a vow, Leviticus chapter 27 and Numbers chapter 30 deal explicitly, have a lot to say about this, but here again talks about these vows. But is it a sin to not vow anything? Do you have to vow? Verse 22? No, you do not. You can. I've heard one person say, let your yes be yes and your no be no. All right, that works. Any guesses as to who said that? Jesus, excellent. Letters in red, right? You shall be careful to perform what goes out of your lips, just as you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God and what you have promised. So make sure that we're careful with what we say. When you enter a neighbor's vineyard, you may eat grapes until you are fully satisfied, but you shall not put any in your basket. And same way with the neighbor's standing grain. If you go in and you can take the grain and rub it and eat the grain of your neighbor's field. I don't know about you, maybe I'd put like a huge fence around my vineyard at that point, if anybody can just go wandering through and just eat what they want. But the concept here, you see over and over again, there's these things kind of built in to just allow these things to happen. This is God's provision for those who need it. This is God's way of providing for people. And even if they take a lot, it's added to your righteousness. God says, I will bless you in doing the right things. I will bless you. Even if in that moment it doesn't seem like that, it seems like they're taking all my grapes. That one bundle of grapes that I've been waiting on to get ripe, and this guy comes in and just takes it, right? And I wonder also if they had people that just were wandering around from vineyard to vineyard waiting for the grapes to be ripe, and they didn't have a vineyard of their own. There's always going to be somebody like that that will take advantage of the situation. But we see no law here about prohibiting them, but we do see God talking about how he will bless those who practice these things and do and practice righteousness. If you want to write out here Mark chapter 12, verse 1, and Luke 6, verse 1, this is the situation where the disciples were walking through the field and they took the grain in like manner and ate the grain the same way. In verse 20, in chapter 24, we get into laws of putting away. You may have in your text here divorce, but it's this idea of putting away. When a man takes a wife and marries her, verse 1 of chapter 24, it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her. This word indecency is what people in Jesus' time were really trying to interpret what this word indecent meant. Some, and those who challenged Christ in Matthew chapter 19, verse 3, they looked at indecency as in anything. They took a very broad view of what indecency meant for any cause or every cause. And really, it's about some sort of shameful act. There's some sort of shameful thing that he discovered about her in their, either in their, just after shortly being married or in their engagement period, some sort of shameful thing. Now, where do we see an individual who discovered something that could possibly have been shameful and he sought to put her away privately? Joseph. That's this, right? That's where he didn't want to make a public spectacle of her, because if you make a public spectacle of her, what's the end of someone who did that? And you do it in a very public way. What is the end? Their death, stoning. Nobody's going to believe it's miraculous, right? And so he sought to put her away privately. He was a righteous, and he tried to save face, to save her. So that's where this comes into play. And she leaves his house and goes and becomes another man's wife. And this goes into some situational kind of awareness here about what's happening here with this relationship. And if the latter husband turns against her and writes her a certificate, the second husband also divorces her and puts her in her hand and sends her out of the house. Or if the latter husband dies, who took her, even the second husband dies, then her former husband who sent her away is not allowed to take her again to be his wife. It's not. You're not allowed to go back. And there may be various reasons. It says, but since she has been defiled, for it is an abomination before the Lord. He can't go back. And in this case also, if you can just, you know, bounce around like that, it might open up doors for just, you know, these doing these things were very serious. It wasn't something to be taken lightly. And so you need to make a good decision. Is this something you really need to be doing? And so that was something that they needed to be aware of. When a man takes a new wife, he shall not go out with the army, nor be charged with any duty. He shall be free at home 1 year and shall give happiness to his wife, whom he has taken. This is when the wife gets out all the honey-do lists and we hang on the curtains and we get the house set up and everything. That's that first year. After the first year, he's off the hook for hanging curtains. Obviously, we have here the idea of establishing the home. Does God put importance on establishing the home and building the home up? Yes. And we'll see also in connection with this that it was important that the generations continued. There are steps that were taken to make sure that the generations continued. And this is one of those things that make sure that you are continuing your name in that first year. So we get into some more different laws here. Anybody have a handmill or a millstone that you use on a regular basis? Not talking about your coffee grinder. That doesn't count. So these were things that says you cannot take a handmill or an upper millstone as a pledge. When they talk about taking something as a pledge, what are they talking about? What is taking something for a pledge? Like collateral, right? It's like, well, I'll pay you back. Here's my millstone. He's like, oh, no, I can't take your millstone. And if you took somebody's garment at night, if that was their only garment, you were supposed to give them their garment back at night, so they would not be cold at night. But then the next morning, you knock on the door at 8 and get their garment back. Right? I don't know. But so he says, don't take the millstone for the, he'll be like taking life as a pledge. Your life was so tied around a millstone, like everything that you did as far as grinding, and that was a center part of your family. Maybe the coffee pot is for you and your family, but here, this you couldn't do that. If a man is caught kidnapping any of his countrymen, and he sells them, then that thief shall die, so you shall purge the evil from among you. Be careful against an infection. All right, this is interesting. Verses 8 and 9, be careful. There's this careful, this idea, be careful about leprosy. Be careful of leprosy. I don't know if they have like signs up about leprosy warnings and like leprosy's in a bush, ready to jump out and get you, right? Why is it interesting here? And he says, remember that what the Lord your God did to Miriam on the way as you came out of Egypt. Be careful against an infection of leprosy that you diligently observe and do according to all that the Levitical priests teach you. Is it because they have the laws in place in order for you to never get leprosy? This is kind of hinting at that leprosy might come on you if you are not obedient to what the Levites are saying. What did Miriam do? What did Miriam do that caused her to have leprosy? She rebelled, right? Her and Aaron were rebelling. And so here again, there's this reminder, don't rebel against the priests. You might get leprosy, right? So that's what this warning is about. Not that you gotta, you know, make sure you wash your hands like the priests tell you to. This is about making sure you're obeying them so you don't get leprosy like Miriam did. When you make your neighbor a loan of any sort, you shall not enter his house to take his pledge. You don't just come marching in there to take it. You remain outside. Be cordial, civil, and respectful. And let him bring the loan out to you. If he's a poor man, you shall not sleep. You shall not sleep with his pledge. That is, you don't keep his coat or whatever it is. You let him use it. And when the sun goes down, you shall surely return the pledge to him. It will be righteousness for you before the Lord your God. Again, just treating everybody with respect. Do you see the respect and the humanity that's supposed to be maintained here in these texts and how they interact with one another? The idea that somebody, if you've made pledge and you're going to just walk into his house and take the money that's owed you, it's not respectful. Let that man still maintain authority of his house. Let him maintain safe face in the community. Let him bring it out to you and pay you. So there we see this over and over again, this idea here that they're supposed to treat each other in this way. You shall not oppress a hired servant who's poor and needy, one of your countrymen. And so make sure you're not oppressing these people. You shall give him his wages. Verse 16, fathers shall not be put to death for their sons, and their sons shall not be put to death for their fathers. Everyone shall be put to death for his own sin. The soul that sins, it shall die, is again, kind of what we see in Ezekiel as well. You shall not pervert the justice due an alien or an orphan, nor take a widow's garment in pledge, but you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt. Over and over again, widows, orphans, aliens, the downtrodden, you better be careful around them in God's eyes. You better be respectful to them, to any of those who can't fend for themselves. Right? When you reap and harvest in your field, what are you supposed to do? Leave the corners. Leave the corners. And we see that play out in a certain instance in the Bible. What about if you drop something in the field? You got to leave it. Can you go through and poor olive trees? Verse 20, when you beat your olive tree, I mean, that's just, it's horrible. What are they talking about? Like shaking it or, you know, hitting the branches and that kind of stuff. You shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the alien. So you only get what falls out. So you got to time it just right, okay? Time it just right. But that's what you get. The rest you leave for the others And again, this idea of righteousness, that we're supposed to be doing these things. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not go over it again. Go through once. If you go through, it's like, oh, but I missed. You know, you don't get to go through again. Let other people go through, and go, and that's for them. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Empathy, compassion, concern for people, over even in the laws that they practice, this was something that God says, if you're not going to actually do it on your own, I'm going to build it into the laws of how you even reap these things, that you do it the way that shows empathy and compassion for others. So is it any wonder that when Christ came along and we see him in the Gospels and you see the stark contrast of the religious elite compared to those that were downtrodden and Christ coming and working with those who were marginalized and you see him having compassion for people, God has compassion for everyone, but especially those who cannot fend for themselves. I think that's where we're going to have to leave it tonight. Any thoughts, questions, concerns, shout outs? Okay, thank you very much for your time tonight. I appreciate your attention.